Hey, before we start the show, just a thought. Now that the holidays are over, I recognize there's a possibility that you didn't get that jersey, hat, or sweatshirt, or whatever, from your favorite soccer club. But did you know? Thankfully, all of that's still available by the great people at soccer90.com. Additionally, while you could go shop for it on their fantastic website, you do know, don't you, there is an actual retail store. Yes, there's an actual Soccer 90 brick and mortar thing up in Frisco, Texas, at Toyota Stadium next to the Hall of Fame. They're open every day of the week other than Monday. It is a great place to walk in and see everything that you and I love, soccer stuff galore. U.S. national team, MLS teams, international club teams from all over the world. They've got it. Chelsea, Man City, Bayern, Juventus, Manchester United, they got a little bit of stuff from every place. And if they don't have it, make sure you ask them, because sometimes it's tough to get that stuff. Like if you're looking for a Ricardo Pepi Osberg jersey, well, you should know they're working on getting those. They also have other types of soccer gear like shin guards, gloves, etc. A little bit of everything for a little bit of all. Go to soccer90.com, the website, or go to the store in Frisco, Texas. And when you do check out, use the code KICKAROUND to get 25% off. Some exclusions apply. Soccer90.com, soccer Christmas 24/7.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, our very own yellow and red card, Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Half an hour play. Oh, and the opening goal! And it's the substitute, Yerry Mina! The Frank Lampard era underway with a goal from his Colombian centre-back, providing a very welcome reminder of the good old days.
Hi-da-ho, P1s, and welcome to today's Kick Around. Look at us broadcasting on a Saturday from 2 to 4. Everything's back to normal for you, the good P1 that likes to sit around, talks some soccers, and all that implies. Hi, don't forget, you can find us on our website. It's bright and shiny and new, thekickaround.com. And for those of you who are new here or unfamiliar, hi, my name is Peter. And also in this room with me is a noted soccer expert. His name, Andy Swift.
Hello, Peter. How are you today? In this fine FA Cup weekend.
The FA Cup continues to be so cruel.
So cruel? Because your team lost.
It's cruel. A heartless, cruel tournament of pain.
The FA Cup is romantic and everything football should be about.
Wrong. You are so wrong, sir.
When the minnows come out and slash.
But that didn't happen, did it,
Goliath?
Andy? We had two massive opportunities for minnows to slay Goliath. Okay. Middlesbrough in the championship is not minnow.
Oh, because they were just playing a run-of-the-mill EPL team.
Right.
Who were
exactly.
they playing?
Mid-table
no,
Manchester
they were playing
United.
Manchester United.
Oh, that's Liverpool's it. Better than Man U. Totally.
Right. Except also United's not bad.
But today, Chelsea at home against Little Plymouth in League Two.
Mm-hmm.
West Ham United had to go to some place called Kidderminster in a stadium called It's the Augsborough? I can't remember.
England.
What the name of that stadium is. It's pretty
I'll look it up.
I had it here.
How were you consuming those two matches? One over the other, both at the same time? What did you choose?
No, I was watching the Ham game.
Yeah, Agborough.
At Agborough. Yeah. Thank you. Against Kidderminster.
That's the one I chose to watch simply because
Watching FA Cup games at little non-league stadiums
right,
is fantastic.
Exactly.
Except I have to say that's the fanciest, most kick-ass non-league stadium I've seen.
So let's explain non-league. This is the sixth tier. or yes. below, but
so
in
you've
the
got,
case of...
You've got the Premier League at the mm-hmm. top, yeah. and then you've got Championship, League One, League Two. Those are all part of what's called EFL.
Okay.
That is league football.
Right.
And anything underneath League Two is all deemed yeah. non-league.
Right. And fully professional still or semi-pro?
Depends.
Yeah. A lot of teams are still fully professional at that level, especially those that have played at higher levels and have come down and they're trying to get back up.
Kidderminster is a great example of this. That reason why that stadium is so nice is that they actually won promotion out of non-league to League Two back in, I think it was the late 90s, somewhere in the 80s or 90s, but were then deemed unable to get the promotion because their stadium at the time didn't meet the requirements. So they were forced to stay in non-league. Mm-hmm. They did some upgrades to the stadium, and then they did eventually end up winning promotion to League Two. And I think they were in League Two up until like 2004, and they got relegated again, and they're yep. back down there. So,
and they also had a very interesting FA Cup game in which they almost won a few years ago, right? Back in 04, just when that was happening, when they were about to go down for the right at the tail end, but yeah, they played the Wolves and they were stretched. They stretched Wolves and had a they were tied in the 80s.
So if you haven't seen what happened today, West Ham goes to Kidderminster, which is just a little bit southwest of Birmingham, right smack dab in the middle of England, or essentially kind of in the middle of England. And it's a small stadium. There's 2,500 seats. They can do self-standing for about another 2,500. And it was amazing scenes. Great to see this little tiny stadium, smaller than pretty much every Texas high school stadium you can think of. And it was packed to the brim. And Kidderminster is winning that game 1-0 against mighty West Ham United, a team fighting for a place in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And this is when the cruelty started, because West Ham scores with nary a minute left mm-hmm. in added time to tie the game, to send it to overtime.
Yes.
And then with just a short and curly worth of minutes left or seconds left before
penalty kicks. We were headed to PKs, Peter.
West Ham did it again yeah. and nabs the game and steals it and yeah. wins it 2-1 in extra time.
That's a neat story. Kidderminster is such a small club that ESPN doesn't even have their logo for where they put the scores up.
Oh, they don't, do they?
They have like a black and white, like
just a
fake like
place
and
place logo here.
Yeah.
And then Chelsea. This is all leading up to a conversation about what happened yesterday. So Chelsea is hosting at Stamford Bridge Plymouth.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying Plymouth actually scored first?
Yeah, they scored early.
Okay, so Plymouth scores first. Chelsea nabs a goal just before halftime, then scores again after halftime to take a 2-1 lead, and then again in injury time, a very clumsy tackle in the box on a Plymouth player gives Plymouth a penalty kick opportunity in like the, and I can't remember what minute it was. It was really late in injury
time. This is after Chelsea's gone up 2-1 in injury time. I mean, in added time. Or this is when it's 1-1. Because Chelsea won it in added extra time.
What?
Chelsea.
Right. Yes, you're correct. So this is in, yes, Chelsea went to extra time, scored,
yeah.
made it 2-1, and then in the very, very late part of the second half of added time of extra time.
Exactly.
The penalty kick is given after some lengthy VAR looking at.
VAR.
Thank you, VAR alarm. We love you so. The guy steps up. And he has to take a penalty kick at Stamford Bridge.
And he's shaking.
And it's Kepa.
Yeah.
They don't even like Kepa at Chelsea anymore.
Right. He can put it to him, right?
And he hit it with his purse, and Kepa saved it easily.
What does that mean, Peter?
Hit it very softly with not a lot of... He didn't drive it hard enough.
Yeah, I was wondering. Okay.
And Plymouth ended up losing that game. Cruelty happens once again. So my question to you, Andy, this is all leading about what happened Friday. Manchester United at home. First time we've seen United play, it feels like, in a month's time.
Yeah.
They're playing at home against Middlesbrough, which is a championship-level team mm-hmm. but it's featuring the great Chris Wilder as their manager now, who has really taken his fantastic, crazy, tactical
to Middlesbrough.
Stylings to Middlesbrough,
okay.
Which is overlapping
center backs
out of a three-man back line,
and
high pressure, high energy, took it to Manchester United, and stole that game at Old Trafford. So what is harder to swallow? Is it losing to a championship team at home or having to go to extra time or penalty kicks, either at home or on the road, to a League Two or even a non-league side? If you're a fan of any of those three teams, West Ham, United, or Chelsea, which one's the one you come away from feeling, if you're Man U, you dominated a game, it was only your lack of finishing that screwed you and a really, really weird call, non-VAR call, and a handball for their goal. But Chelsea and...
Ultimately, nothing trumps not getting through.
Oh, okay. I was worried. I was hoping you'd work with me here, but no.
No. you in your heart, you want it to be like that, don't you?
I did, yeah.
But no, right? You got to get through. And historically, it's not easy to go to those small venues. That team, that's their season, right?
Oh, it's their
Everything
World Cup
is,
final.
Yeah, so... And look, it's, you know... A little bit like playing in CONCACAF on the road in some of these minnow countries, right?
That's a very nice analogy, Andrew. I agree with you.
So anything can happen in those venues, and you got to come prepared.
So yesterday, Manchester United, this is a tough one because Regank is trying to make strides in improving this team, but is struggling. And now they've got the whole Mason Greenwood controversy going on. If you haven't heard, Mason Greenwood has been accused of...
Bad things.
Rape and murderous threats or something like that after his girlfriend posted horrible videos and audio online and photos of her being abused and some really hard to listen to audio of the two of them in bed together, him being a little bit more insistent about activities than she wants to be. That's very weird. So he was arrested and then let out on, I guess, what, English bail? What is English Bale called? Anyway, is that Gareth Bale? And then and then United just said, well, he won't be with us for a while.
They're going beyond that. They just about erased him from the history books.
Yes, and I'm gonna have to stop doing, hey, I stood next to Mason Greenwood at Dallas Cup game bit.
Or calling him MoneyGram Mason?
MoneyGram Mason.
They've offered, not to digress here, but they've offered everybody that's bought a Mason Greenwood jersey
a replacement jersey
for free.
Yeah. So Mason's not with the team, which is the knock-on effect of that was his poor Jesse Lingard couldn't get the move he wanted. He was trying to go to Newcastle.
He was out. They had all the transfers set. And he happened to be the last one that they were going to sign to the transfer.
They let go. They loaned out Donny. They loaned out Martial. Jesse was about to go to Newcastle.
So it was just bureaucratic paperwork, and his paper just fell to the bottom of the three or four pack, right?
But he's so mad that there's some sort of conflict between Regank and Jesse as to whether or not why he wasn't in the starting lineup or in the lineup at all yesterday. So when United needs somebody of Lingard's quality to come on and help salvage this awful situation against Middlesbrough in the FA Cup, he's not available. Now, why, I guess, is up. I mean, Regank says he asked for some extra time off. Jesse says, no, I always make myself available. They wanted me to take, you know, it's who cares? So that's going on. Cavani isn't available because he's somewhere floating. You know, he's coming back from Uruguay. Yeah. He was never going to make it back.
Right.
And then on top of it, I mean, I want to complain about the handball that wasn't called and why that the
you
way
should,
they changed the
United
rule is
fan,
stupid.
You should be mad.
No, you want to be mad about? I want to be mad about Cristiano Ronaldo missing a penalty kick.
Yeah.
Not had one saved.
Right.
Missed a penalty
sure,
kick.
Sure, you want your million-dollar man to make his PK every single time he steps
you
up.
Know what else?
But he's human, and look, he's really, really good at taking PKs.
Is he?
Isn't he?
Yep. I think you need to go look back at
No?
I think it's not as great as you think it is.
Because he's Ronaldo, we just assume?
But I have a grievance even greater than that with Bruno Fernandes, because it was Cristiano that forced the turnover in the penalty area from the keeper right there with good old Bruno standing at the top of the box with a wide open net, hits it with his left foot, and hits the post. Yes, exactly. That's the sound I made in my house at that moment.
And then Ronaldo steps up and...
But the penalty, I think, was before
that. Oh, it was before?
Okay. Yes. Rashford had a really good opportunity.
Yeah.
Shaw crossed in a ball that he missed. They hit a crossbar in another one.
Yeah, later on.
Should have won that game 4-5-0. And then, of course, there's the handball call. Okay, so do you think that the way the rule is written, as that was deemed...
Let's explain the goal for those that didn't see it. The ball bounces off the ground into the attacker's hand.
I think he actually came off his foot.
Okay, his own foot into his hand. He's able to control the ball because of that, and then he crosses the ball into the goal scorer.
Yes.
And this is in the box. So the old new rule was that any handball in the box by the attacking team negated any goal.
Correct.
That's the old new rule. And then, because they just changed that rule, but then now they just changed it back to where if it's accidental.
Unless you're the goal scorer.
Unless you're the goal scorer.
Chris Wilder actually said after the game, I thought it was a straightaway handball. He didn't even realize the rule change.
Right. So ultimately, it's not even about that rule, I don't think. I think we're getting too lost in that rule. It's whether VAR, the referee, and then VAR thought that was an accidental handball or not. And his arms were not tied to his hips, right? He's handling the ball with his arms flailing. And so I would have called that a handball.
Yes. As we were talking about earlier, I wouldn't have had an issue with the change of the rule if it was accidental. To me means I'm facing away from the ball and the ball comes up and hits me in the hand on the back of my hand. But when I'm facing the goal, trapping the ball with my foot, mm-hmm. and it comes up and hits my arm, which is away from my body, which then prevents the ball from getting away from me so that I can pass it to a teammate that scores,
yeah.
I don't think that's the type of handball we want allowed in the game.
It's like I asked you if that
foul
is...
But maybe I'm biased because it was against my team.
If that foul is committed midfield, they call it.
I think they do.
Yes.
I think if that exact same thing happens right. in the center circle, that gets called 10 out of 10
right.
times.
So what happens is the referee sees it. He doesn't call it because he knows it's going to go up to VAR. Now VAR has to think about all the different rules and, you know, the ticky-tack aspect of this new rule, and so therefore they don't call it. And that's why if it happens in midfield, it's just the referee's call, and he calls that a handball.
Yeah.
It's very confusing the way we're explaining it, but
well,
it was definitely a foul, I think.
Fifth season in a row, unless there's some sort of Champions League miracle, Manchester United will go trophyless once again. Now, since I'm sounding all blue and gross because I'm unhappy about my team
losing. Are
they
out of the EPL race?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Come on. Don't be like that.
Yep.
Let's shine a happy glow light on one Sam Hale as his new Frank Lampard-led Everton Toffees won a big FA Cup game today at home over Brentford 4-1. Look at all of those goals, Sam.
It's what's such a foreign concept to me. What's a goal? I haven't seen one in so long.
Are you, as a fan, rejuvenated with the change now? Are you re-enthused and ready to get back to mid-table?
You just had to end it that way. You just couldn't let me be. Call me on Tuesday afternoon after the Newcastle game. Like, I'm glad they won today because it's better than losing, and I was glad to see so many goals. But the Premier League is where we're going to – we need to get out of the relegation zone. If we can get out of relegation, and Newcastle's a big game for that. Now, if we go into Newcastle on Tuesday and get spanked, I'm probably going to still be unhappy. But that game means a lot more to me than this one, even though I was very happy to wake up and watch a win this week.
All right, we'll talk a little more Everton here in a second. Right now, currently, Spurs is leading Brighton 2-0 in the 25th minute in the FA Cup. Harry Kane and Solly Marsh, there was Solly Marsh's own goal. Harry Kane has also scored. Crystal Palace won its FA Cup game 2-0 over Hartlepool, and Huddersfield beat Barnsley. Manchester City clobbered Fulham. That looked like that was going to be way more goals than it was, because Fulham scored very early, and then City followed up 2 minutes later. Within the first 6 minutes, it was already 1-1. Peterborough beat Queen's Park Rangers 2-0. Southampton beat Coventry City 2-1. Stoke beat Wigan 2-0. Norwich got a big win today over Wolves on the road, 1-0. And Luton Town, look at Dan Crook's Luton Town beating Cambridge 3-0. In fact, Luton Town's even top 10 in the championship.
That's what I'm saying. They're a thing now.
They may get promoted.
They're a little bit too far from that last playoff spot still, but
not according to Dan Crook.
Oh, they have a chance. He's doing the Liverpool math that I'm doing.
He's doing Andy Swift's Liverpool math.
All right,
we're going to take a break. When we come back, did y'all know there was actually an important Premier League game today? We'll talk about it next here on the Kick Around. What song are the Kick Around guys performing at Ticketstock this year?
We haven't had our annual meeting to talk about this yet.
Do you have any submissions?
Life is
you
life.
You never walk alone.
About life is life.
I think you might have missed the deadline.
Oh, did we?
Okay.
Pretty sure it was last year.
Andy and I were totally up for doing it. If it's too late, sure. It's too late.
Your famous musicians, Andy Swift and Peter Welton, were here.
Hey.
How do you know?
Are you musicians? Can you play a musical instrument?
Maybe we are just really good singers
are
in harmony.
Are you good singers?
Well, you're never going to know now.
The world will never recover.
It's always next year.
All right. Coming up on the show today.
Let's check this off. Okay.
Andy is going to explain to us how Canada is going to win the World Cup now.
Excellent.
Daniel Robertson's going to check in with about the big Milan derby that took place today. That was an exciting game.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do an episode of The Dribble. And the thing I'm most excited about, no offense to Daniel and to Canada, we're going to talk about Robot VAR, and it is here.
The VAR, 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 VAR,
Very excited about Robot VAR. Robot VAR will beat like umpire VAR in baseball.
It's like Sky Judge almost. Yeah, we can do that. So we'll talk about those things. Now, believe it or not, while all that FA Cup action was going on, there was actually, for many people, a surprise, a Premier League game that took place today and just finished up.
This is a makeup game, I guess, right?
Is it one of the makeup games? It may be. There's so many games to be made up in the Premier League this year. I'm sure it was a makeup game based on the fact that these two teams got knocked out of the FA Cup in the previous round. Watford and Burnley. And this is a big deal because these are two teams fighting at the bottom of the table, tooth and nail, to try to figure out how to get out. And somehow Norwich has leaked their way out of that group of teams. It ended up 0-0. It was not a very exciting game today.
No, and Burnley, who sits at the bottom, the what we've been saying about them is, well, they have games in hand, but you got to win those games, right?
Yes.
And here was one of them.
They showed off their new German tree of a striker, Horgvurst.
Okay.
He didn't have much in his bag today, but it was his first game, you know. And Watford debuted good old-fashioned Roy Hodgins.
As the gaffer.
As the new manager.
How long
great
will he
Liverpool
last?
Great, Crystal Palace great. I thought he was a very odd choice for Watford because Roy's system isn't one commonly noted as like a quick fix.
Innovative? Oh.
No. He's not like Allardyce that goes in and suddenly makes them fantastic in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's so much attacking talent in theory on the Watford team. They should be better than they are. So you can look at this one of two ways. You can look at it as here's a team that have given up 40 goals already this year that didn't give up any, although it was against a Burnley team that's only scored 8 this year. Or you can say, well, Roy, what happened to all the goals you were going to help us achieve?
Because Burnley scored 16. Don't short.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at the table wrong. They had scored only 16.
Twice as many as you said, which is still far less than any other team in Premier League.
Except for Norwich. Norwich has only scored 13.
Okay.
Watford, on the other hand, has scored 23 goals, and they were trying to amp that up, and that didn't happen today either. So,
what an exciting match it was that you were watching on your phone as we were getting ready for the show.
Yeah.
I decided to just kind of get the audio from you. I didn't think,
You didn't think it was worth watching since you were the co-host of a soccer show on a big...
What exciting, from watching the game, what exciting highlights can you tell us about? How can you add more value to the show now that you've seen the game?
Roy was wearing a pair of reading glasses that I had not seen before. That looked pretty snazzy.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
It was. It looked very cold outside, and okay. and Sean Dice was just wearing his dress shirt and tie,
precisely.
Being very manly.
Yeah, made my point.
So
the result, good for neither team at the end of the day. Both needed that win.
Right. And so here's where this gets interesting, because Newcastle, the window is now closed, and when Newcastle got bought by the nation state of Saudi Arabia, we all made the assumption they were going to splash the cash, as they like to say over there, and buy like a Messi and a Ronaldo and a Neymar type.
Yeah, and to lead them out of the gold.
Fix their wagon. Mm-hmm. No, they ended up with Chris Wood.
And nobody else.
And a collection of other guys.
Yeah.
That here, let me say this. I am somewhat surprised at the quality of the players they got. I think Newcastle may now have enough pieces in place to salvage this season. Because here's the thing. You're never going to get big name players to come do this on the chance they may not end up playing in the Premier League, right? Mm-hmm. So now you got to go find guys that can help you salvage a season mm-hmm. that you can then somehow divest yourself from when you are up and you do
go buy
now
Messi.
Can go buy the Messis and Ronaldos, right? Because right? mm-hmm. now you got Chris Wood. What are you going to do with Chris Wood in the Premier League next year when you've gone out and bought all this world-class talent that now are excited about
you
making?
Loan him is what right. you do.
I guess, I suppose.
To Southampton or somebody.
But
I am going to predict this now. I think Newcastle has done enough in terms of
really?
The purchase
you
window
do.
To say, hey, look, they're only a point out of the relegation zone.
Quick snapshot again. We do it every week. The snapshot. There's four teams fighting to avoid three spots. So one of these four teams will save themselves. That's Norwich, Watford, Newcastle, and Burnley. They're all within two or three points of each other, right?
Burnley, though, has as many as three games in hand, depending on who
right.
you're talking.
Yeah, they're the bottom one. Norwich is at the top 16, the other two 15. So it's all very close. Everton at 19. Close, too close for comfort, I'm sure, for Everton supporters. Two games in hand, I think they'll be fine. So it's really those four teams fighting to avoid three spots.
How far up the table will Frank Lampard lead his newly powered Everton? By the way, which also bought Dele Alli, which is crazy, and also got on loan Donny van de Beek from Manchester United.
I think that's a good deal.
It does have a weird feeling that they bought two guys that play a similar position. And
more of a the midfield, like a not even box to box guys, right? More winger and midfield type. Well, no, actually, Van de Beek isn't he more middle and Alli?
Van de Beek, I would
side.
Say, is more of an eight box to box. Dele can do that too, but he also plays forward.
Yeah,
more of a 8-10 type of player. Okay. I wouldn't say Dele Alli is a winger, although I'm sure he can play it. I don't know. They have a lot of players to play in the midfield. They've got Decore. They've got Alon. Who else am I forgetting about you've got in there?
If they're going to play...
One of those is hurt. Fabian Delp is still there.
Yeah. You've got Gomez.
Bannon is there. Andre Gomez is terrible, but he is still here,
defensive destroyer is what you need if you're going to play Dele.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what right. Alon will probably settle into that six role.
Anyway, how many spots up does he take him? I don't know. Maybe one or two.
But you're not worried. Sam, are you worried about relegation at all?
Yes, but I like in a small sense right now, yes. But I think within hopefully a month, I won't be anymore. But right this minute, yeah, I am worried about it.
Okay. That was a lot of answer for a very simple question. You are worried about it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey,
I believe you.
While we're talking Premier League stuff, a recent signing by a very prominent, brandy, big-time club in England has just signed an American goalkeeper. And that story really hasn't made much waves over here.
Yeah, Matt Turner's signing to Arsenal is one that I find very confusing and perplexing.
On the Matt Turner side, right? Well, I guess on both sides. Like,
Matt Turner is a fantastic shot stopper. But if he has a weakness in his game, it's his ability to play with the ball at his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And Arsenal, under Arteta, has been very insistent on playing the ball out of the back. And it just surprises me that in a globe filled with goalkeepers, you go out and grab Matt Turner.
when, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that just, I
sure,
just,
no, very good point. So, and for Matt Turner to go there and be the number two also when he's just made it to the national team, he's in a good spot in New England.
Right.
Good coach.
I don't know. I don't get it. And again, this is one of those weird deals where I think a guy sees an opportunity and doesn't have a ton of places to choose from. And it's like, I can make a lot more money. I get to go play on a storied team in England in the Premier League.
Goalkeepers play a long time. They develop and mature later. He could have waited is what I'm saying.
I think
so. Had that opportunity later.
Especially with the World Cup. I mean, because now the United States faces a reality that both of their number one and number two goalkeepers are guys sitting on the bench.
They're playing cup games.
Right. Zach Steffen played for City today, but he very rarely plays.
He plays the cup.
On a regular for them, and if that happens with Turner, and I prefer Turner over Zach Steffen anyway.
Yeah, I do too.
I think he's a better goalkeeper, but I did find
good personality
that weird.
Too.
Are you excited about the guy Liverpool's trying to get?
I am, and honestly, I didn't know much about him other than like in Champions League he's played, but I don't remember him like South American qualifiers. He plays for Colombia, but I've seen video and highlights, and man, that's pretty exciting. Dribbler, good with the ball on his feet. My question is, you know, as is true with a lot of these guys that go to the Premier League and then play for these
what's his name
systems,
I forgot.
Diaz?
Oh yeah, Luis Diaz. Thank you.
How is he going to adapt to this high press system, because he does not play like that with Colombia, and he didn't play at Porto. He wasn't, that's not their system.
Jurgen will figure it out.
He wouldn't have gotten him had he not seen potential there.
No, you're right. Yeah, it was a very weird winter window. City went out and bought a guy that has got a lot of people, you know, pretty excited about that. Chelsea was quiet. Manchester United essentially shedded a lot of weight and didn't bring anybody in. I mean, United's situation continues to baffle me, because I don't think Ragnick, or as we love to call him, Regonk, is going to continue to be the manager. I think they're trying to figure out how to get Pochettino or somebody to come in and take his place. He doesn't like being in front of the spotlight. He just doesn't like it. Mm. I think he wants to do the consultancy thing.
But he's open to continuing.
Yeah, you know, Pogba played yesterday for the first time in this, you know, system, and, you know, I have pros and cons about that. I just, the whole United thing is such a weird deal. And, you know, with players leaving, Arsenal's situation with letting Aubameyang leave essentially for nothing. They just keep letting players go for no profit at all. And what is
Barcelona doing signing him? He's 31. They signed him to a 3-year deal, too. So that seemed kind of
because odd. It's a guy I think they believe can help them that they got
on the cheap.
On the cheap, I guess. I don't know, man.
And by the way, did you hear or read his comments that the only problem he had at Arsenal was Arteta? That it was. He
well,
just
here's my question for you. Barcelona not only went out and got the guy who's kind of a.
And Xavi pushed for him. Xavi, the coach.
Right. Yeah. But here's a guy that was already getting in trouble with his club team. Mm-hmm. And am I correct in saying that he got sent home from his national team from the African Cup of Nations for some sort of behavior issue?
Man, I don't remember.
I swear
that.
I read a headline that he got, they essentially, is it Gabon he plays for? Mm-hmm. He got kicked. They were like, yeah, why don't you just go ahead and go home?
Wow. That's something.
Now, I may have that wrong. I may be mixing people up, but yeah.
It wasn't like COVID related or something like that.
No,
right?
I'm under the impression it was. So that just seems to be like, why would Barcelona want that in their mix? But they're in such a weird spot. Yeah. So, all right. We'll get back to all the Premier League stuff next week when we do this again. When we come back, Andy is going to tell us how Canada is about to win the World Cup next here on The Kick Around.
The Tick.
The Soroy brothers were asking during the mix about Italy stuff, going to games over in Italy, and it dawned on me maybe we should point them in the direction of one Daniel Robertson, who will be joining us shortly to talk about today's giant, massive, brilliant Milan derby that took place. We'll do that and talk a little robot VAR here before the end of the show. First off, allow me to drop to my knees and bow towards the greatness of the North. The maple syrups are undefeated. Mm-hmm. And since we last talked, Andy, you versus me, America, Eagle versus Moose, according to the official match poster.
And Las Vegas statue.
That's right. Yeah. Canada stuck it to my boys 2-0 mm-hmm. up in Hamilton, Ontario, on the weirdest place to ever choose to play a soccer game I can think of.
Which led to Minnesota.
Right.
Because of that. Then,
yeah, I want to talk about the whole field selection thing here in a second.
All right.
But I do want to take a minute, Andy, because this has got to be weird for you. I didn't even realize this until afterwards I was doing a bit of research. Because it all feels like, to me, Canada suddenly got good at soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Because Herdman's done one thing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if you think I'm right. He's figured out what this collection of guys are good at, and they can repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a winning formula.
Yeah, I agree completely. Two things. That, play within your means, figure out what we are, and let's play that way, and be consistent and disciplined about it. And two, a belief in yourself, too. I think
that's team spirit.
Yeah, he's brought that.
Do you feel, am I on the right track to say that Canada of 2022 feels a lot like one of the older American teams from back in the day?
Yeah, back in the early 90s when they were just getting their S together. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where they got by with a lot of guile and spirit and just willing to work harder than the other team.
Speed, athleticism.
Yeah. It was a weird game, but the thing that dawned on me, and the reason why I realized that I was correct in thinking maybe Canada just got good at soccer, is not only are they undefeated, and this may be the first time, Andy, I don't know if in the history of World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF, a team will end up going undefeated when you also add in the fact that Canada had to go through the earlier pre-qualifying rounds that the U.S. and Mexico didn't have to go through.
Yeah, I think Mexico has gone undefeated in CONCACAF
qualifying. But they didn't have to go through those earlier rounds.
Right. So what you're saying, has any team gone this many, has had this long of a qualifying schedule and go undefeated?
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, they've got three games left.
They do, and they're tough ones. Jamaica at home, hopefully that's the one that clinches it. But before that, they have Costa Rica on the road, and then they finish with Panama on the road. Both of those teams will be like,
they've got to win.
Whatever it takes. So your hope, and all they need is a tie. Canada has automatically already clinched at least at worst fourth.
Correct.
Right? The playoff spot.
The play-in spot, yeah.
But one more point gets them in the World Cup, and hopefully that comes against Jamaica. Hopefully it comes on the road against Costa Rica in that first match, but they do have Jamaica at home.
Before we started this window, I was thinking I thought Canada was going to cool off because they never had won a World Cup qualifier in a Central American country, and they did that in this particular last window. In fact, they did it twice, at Honduras and at El Salvador. Not only did they do that, they ended up with full 9 points, which is unbelievable.
And they tied. They got a point on the road against the two CONCACAF powerhouses, the U.S. and Mexico, and that was key, too.
Yeah, to be able to get points in all four of those games, U.S. and Mexico didn't do that this particular time. So that's a big deal. Now, the reason why this all gets interesting is that while the U.S. did end up getting 6 points from the window, they won the two home games they needed to win. The loss against Canada hurt them a little bit because now the situation gets really sticky for the U.S. because they have to go to Mexico, who will get a full stadium back. Their ban on fans is over. Then they have the game that's going to mean everything is the home game against Panama.
Right.
We don't know where that's being played yet.
Yeah, we do know that one.
They said where that's being played?
In Florida, I think. Orlando. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the game that you don't want to mean anything is the final game at Costa Rica, a place the U.S. has never won a World Cup qualifier.
Yeah. Depending how things turn out, and if they maybe only get a draw against Panama, that last game against Costa Rica could be to decide who avoids fourth, for example.
Yeah, there is a scenario where the U.S. loses out and ends up fifth and out of the World Cup again.
That's
the...
That's
really loud. That would be the worst-case scenario, but there is another scenario where the U.S. loses to Mexico, loses to Panama, and then it comes down to not just the U.S. having to win on the road in Costa Rica, it also then counts on the Canadians to get a result against Panama in Panama, probably at a point where the Canadians don't care anymore.
look, this could happen. The U.S. could beat Panama at home,
and
lose
still
to Mexico, and then have to go to Costa Rica. And if they lose, they end up in like fourth.
Right. They have to go to the play-in.
Yeah.
Game. Yeah. They can't just... A lot of this is going to rely on
other results.
Canada,
right?
Getting a result in Costa Rica. Like the U.S. really needs Costa Rica. Now, you know, after the game against Jamaica, Costa Rica, there were some accusations that they had played players with positive COVID tests.
Right, but so FIFA and CONCACAF, because World Cup qualifiers are not it's not a CONCACAF tournament. It's an official FIFA tournament. Right, so it's FIFA rules, FIFA personnel. So I believe what happened there was those two players that played that had tested positive had already had COVID within 10 days or at least 10 days.
It all got cleared up is what you're saying. Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. So we're not in a situation where Costa Rica is going to have to mm-hmm. forfeit a game or anything. No. All right. So that's how it stands at this particular moment. The U.S. did end up beating Honduras in the most miserably silly conditions I can possibly imagine. It was ridiculous. Pepe finally started. He didn't start the Canadian game. He didn't start the game prior to that. He ends up getting a broken nose early in the game. Did you not know that?
No.
Oh, yeah. So the collision early in the game, he ended up breaking that. They said afterwards it was a broken nose. So not only did he played in those conditions, he played in those conditions with a fractured nose.
All right. Let's talk about how hard it is to play in cold weather, like extreme cold weather, and how hard it is to breathe.
Yeah.
And now
it was like 5 degrees at kickoff. Here's what I want to talk, because people have been asking me this. Why? Well, first off, everybody should know the home federation is the one that makes the decision.
Yeah.
The second part is, why would the U.S. choose to do this to themselves?
Right. And my issue is, it turned out to be okay. I mean, it was just really, really cold. But had it snowed, and we're talking early February in St. Paul, Minnesota, the odds that they're pretty good that it was going to snow during the game, right? That, you know, you're flipping a coin at that point. If it snows and you have a snow event, you're basically taking away all advantages the U.S. has of being the better team. I mean, on paper, the U.S. should beat Honduras anywhere they play in the U.S.,
yeah,
right?
Honduras is winless. They just had to travel 2,000 miles.
You add the element of snow, and then that completely gets erased. It didn't happen, and they ended up winning 3-0 easily. Not easily, but, handedly.
Here's the thing, and this is what I thought about after the famous Snow Classico against Costa Rica, because a lot of people were like, man, Honduras had to sub a couple of guys out that had hypothermia.
Yeah, the goalkeeper at halftime.
By the way, the conditions in which they played the game actually go against the U.S. Federation's own guidelines. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a whole chart of wind temperature and when you should cancel stuff. That was clearly in the section that said, you might want to think about changing.
Go indoors. Go somewhere else.
And by the way, there was a stadium just not too far away. They could have played it inside.
The emergency stadium that they had lined up as plan B, Austin.
Oh, was it really?
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. What people tend to forget is that every other country in CONCACAF go out of their way to stick the U.S. in their worst possible playing conditions. Mexico forces the U.S. to play in that giant stadium at altitude in the smog in Mexico City. That's a brutal place to play for both of those reasons. El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, all of those countries in Central America stick the U.S. in the hottest, stickiest.
Yeah. And some of those countries, it's all the same. I mean, they're small countries. Wherever you play it, it's going to be like that. But that's their advantage.
But they'll play them during the day versus night.
Exactly.
You know, and those are in many ways equally as dangerous health conditions, just the other end of the scale.
Right.
So when you see what the U.S. is doing, it's almost like sticking it back to them. I kind of wish everybody would just find a middle ground and go.
Well, that's my point. My point is extreme cold, that was fine. The elements the U.S. handled, and it affected Honduras more than the U.S., but had it snowed, and that's the chance you're taking by playing in St. Paul, had it snowed, then it would have been a different story. Can you get that cold weather element? And
So here's why are they playing Panama in Orlando? That's the part that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would you go to such extremes to play the two bottom of the table guys in the worst possible conditions?
Because it's close to Miami, and they're flying to Mexico, and they're flying to Costa Rica, and they want to be close to the airport that gets them there, I believe.
So it's okay, because this is the other element that is kind of behind the scenes, which is all about the least amount of travel possible.
Yeah, least amount of hours on a plane. He's big about that.
Okay, well, I get it.
And so that's why they played in Minnesota and Columbus, Minnesota especially, because it was close to Toronto where they're going to have to play. You know, Hamilton, they were going to have to fly out of Toronto. So look, when it's 50 degrees and we go play Sunday pickup soccer, you're dressed like an Eskimo. How would you, like, what would you do in that?
I couldn't. Like, I don't know how anybody played in those conditions, because all your limbs freeze mm-hmm. up. That ball is like kicking a rock.
And the ball hits you in the head.
It's the worst conditions possible.
But they handle it well. Look, and Weston McKennie, again, looked like it's his team, right?
Man, I said this on Buzz's podcast. Watching Kellen Acosta and Weston McKennie boss around a World Cup qualifier is such a proud thing for me as a guy from Dallas, because those are not just kids that came through a Dallas pro team, but they're from here, right? Pepe's from El Paso.
Yeah.
Chris Richards, he's from Alabama. Weston and Kellen are from the DFW area, and they were kings in that game.
Yeah, Acosta was very good.
All right, I was going to ask you real quick about Mexico, because Tata is in a weird spot They struggled to get their points against Panama very late in the game. They're still a point behind the United States, or they're tied with the United States at 21 points, but behind on goal differential. They have the easy.
That's to their advantage, is the schedule, right?
The schedule works out really well. And they get their fans back.
Yeah, they have two home games, one on the road. The U.S. has one home game, two on the road, and that's the difference.
Yeah, I just, as a jaded, what's the word, traumatized U.S. fan, looking at the rest of the schedule and realizing that you now have to count on Canada to help out, keep the U.S. from its own self, because if Canada beats Costa Rica and beats Panama on the road,
this is all a non-factor. But at some point, Canada is going to be qualified.
I know that's the point. That's my point, Andy.
So that's why you're being all nice.
Because the Canadians and the United States really have the worst of the rest of the schedules as compared to the people that are chasing them for the rest of it. Because Mexico, Panama, and Costa Rica in this next window have two home games.
Yep.
Canada and the U.S. both have to go on the road twice.
Canada took care of business when they had to. Did you know Canada beat France?
And then there's the whole Christian Pulisic thing, like not starting him against Honduras, and what's going on there?
Well, he came on and scored a goal, so it was the right move. And then off of Pepe's flick, by the way.
Yeah.
Did you see the flick?
I saw the flick.
Nice little flick. Do you criticize Berhalter for benching him against Honduras?
No, I thought they had to do that.
Who's the kid that played?
De La Torre.
Good. Now, I mean, I don't
Luca
know much
De La Torre
about him,
is
honestly.
Such a fantastic
do you
player.
Know much
well,
about
you know,
him?
He was with Fulham for a long time, and Fulham wouldn't
played.
Do anything. And so now he's playing in some unknown team, and I think in Belgium or something. And, you know, I think his contract's up at the end of the year. So, that guy covered so much ground and played so well.
Looked really good.
It's very weird to see the U.S. consider that their midfield's not really their problem. That's something we've never had to deal with before.
So, speaking of the Dallas and the homegrown guys, though, shout out to FC Dallas, who at one point, I think six of the 11 players were either academy products or guys on the team,
pick.
A draft pick. Yeah. Zimmerman, I mean, he was drafted through Dallas and started here. You know?
Yeah. It's very weird to see all those guys heading up the national team. It's a good time to be a fan of good old FCD, that's for sure. So the games pick up again on March the 24th. That first game is U.S. versus Mexico in Mexico. I'm assuming it's the Azteca, of course, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that will be a sight to behold.
That's the 24th?
By the way, Herrera, their midfielder, is out on suspension for that game. So that actually worked out in the U.S.'s favor as well. So
Now let's – I know we're short on time, but like let's – let's just say, what if the U.S. gets a point there, right?
Yeah.
Not out of the question.
Right.
All the pressure now goes
on Mexico.
On Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It'd be nice to see Mexico struggle.
Then they're going to be like.
And worry about and sweat it for qualification. That would be fun. All right. We're going to go. When we come back, we're going to dial up our friend Daniel and talk all about today's Milan Derby next year on The Kick Around. I think I have a new sports documentary recommendation that I will do during today's episode of The Dribble before the end of the show. So stick around for that, kids. Welcome back to The Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4. At least feels that we're getting back on track to that. Hi, I'm Peter. He's Andy. And today was a big day in Italy. It was the Milan Derby and Paramount Plus. Did you see the trailer they put together, the promotion trailer for today's game?
I did not.
Oh, it was artistic. It was great. And to discuss it, we are now dialing up on the Diamond Factory Ticket Hotline, your friend and mine, Daniel Robertson. How you doing, Daniel?
Ragazzi, buongiorno a tutti.
Buongiorno, Daniel.
Come stai, amici?
Bono.
Did you see the trailer Paramount Plus put together for the Milan Derby?
Yeah, I did, and it was incredible. And even beyond that, you have to give a lot of credit to the people over at CBS, because they not only created that, but they flew their entire American-based staff over to Milan for the game. They had everyone on the pitch pregame. They had calling it from the stadium, and I was a little bit apprehensive seeing CBS take over the Serie A rights for this season, and I mean they've knocked it out of the park. It's exciting for a fan.
The game was also on CBS Network, not just Paramount, by the way, because I watched it on
CBS Sports,
Network.
Yeah.
So they broadcast it on their network channel too, that not everybody gets. So it was a big deal today, and the storyline out of this is the great, weird, curious story of one Olivier Giroud.
Yeah, I mean, who saw that coming, to be honest? Because he may not even have been starting the match if Zlatan was available. It was touch and go in the week, and he wasn't available. But, yeah, I mean, what a match. The biggest Derby della Madonnina in probably 10 years, top of the table, which obviously neither of these teams have been at too much over the last decade. And, look, it looked like Inter had it in the bag. They were just cruising along, 1-0 lead. And then out of nowhere, Giroud, 75th minute, a scrappy goal. Then 3 minutes later, he rolls Stefan de Vrij like a hand-rolled cigarette and makes it 2-1. Milan steals the 3 points, the title race wide open in Italy.
It does, after so many years of Juventus just kind of winning the Scudetto right out, it is nice to see such a tight race, because am I correct in saying that is it Inter now has a pretty tough go of it, because not only do they have to now go and play Napoli, who are in second place, or at least tied for, I suspect will end up being second place, but now they've also got Champions League and Liverpool facing them too.
Yeah, and they're going to have to kind of decide probably which one they want to prioritize at the end of the day. But, I mean, if Inter had held on to that lead, they would have had a 7-point lead over Napoli, a 4-point lead over Milan, and a nice little cushion there to maybe rest some players in some games. But now, I mean, Milan's a point behind. Napoli could pull within a point within 2 points with a result this weekend. It's wide open. And, yeah, I mean, it couldn't be more exciting for the neutral. And just another big match that delivered in Italy again.
So speaking of those three teams, is Napoli really the best of the three in some ways? I mean, or do you still think Inter is the team to beat and they'll end up winning it all?
You still got to say Inter, just because they have the strongest midfield. They have the strongest defense. And you know what else for Napoli? It looks like Chucky Lozano is going to be out for maybe a month or two. I know he suffered an injury with Mexico in that last World Cup qualifying game a few days ago. I think it was maybe his hamstring, and he looks like he could be out for a month or two, which could be the difference for them between actually, sustaining a title challenge. I still think it's Inter's, but it's way more wide open now than it was about 3 hours ago.
All right, so for P1s that are new-ish to Serie A, could you explain a little bit how the San Siro as a stadium works between those two clubs, how they share that facility with each other, especially on games like today where one has to be the home team?
Yeah, there's a game there every weekend, and either Inter or Milan is going to play a home game. It's owned by the city. They have, I think, it seems like you can basically set your watch to it every year. They put out plans for a new San Siro that looks glorious and you know, rivals Jerry World for the finest stadium, and it never, I mean, it's never going to happen. And so they still just continue to share it. And you have the Curva Nord, which supports Inter, the Curva Sud, which supports Milan. And I mean, look, like I said, Paramount, CBS, they did an excellent job of putting across the atmosphere of the game today. It's one that we all need to see at some point in our life.
Have you been to a Milan derby?
I haven't. I have been to San Siro. It's, you know, it's just one of those cathedrals of English soccer. You know, putting it up there with the Nou Camp and the Bernabeu and all of those. It's big. It's hulking. It's 75,000. It's old. Maybe falling apart a little bit, but it's got its charm.
Hey, so shifting gears a little bit, we were talking about the national team and how Weston McKennie has really changed or turned things around, I guess, after the incident with the national team where Berhalter said basically, you know, just get out of here and we'll take you back at the next window. He was having issues at Juventus as well. There was talk about a transfer, but he's also turned it around there now, right? And, I mean, he's playing really well both for club and country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in November, I think we were talking and saying a move to Tottenham was maybe possible, a move somewhere else, and a price tag of 20, 25 million. Juventus just hoping to get their money back. Now he's, I mean, Allegri has said he's untouchable. He literally used those words. And if you want to say actions speak louder than words, Juventus sold Rodrigo Bentancur to Tottenham this week. They had a few different transfers, but one of them was Bentancur to Tottenham for about 25 million. And you would have thought that was probably going to be Weston McKennie's name about 2 months ago. Now McKennie is basically a penciled in starter on the team. And I mean, I'm not going to say I'm surprised. He always had it in him, but he has absolutely taken a step forward this year. We see it in the national team, and he's been scoring goals for both teams.
All right. Now, since we're talking about Juventus, they currently sit in fifth place with 42 points, which is essentially 11 points behind Inter. But only a point or two, a point behind Atalanta and 7 points behind Napoli. While we have not talked to you in a while, since we last talked to you, Andy and I's team, Fiorentina, sold its best player, Vlahovic, the amazing goal scorer, to Juventus. So now is Juventus positioned to make maybe not a title chase, but at least put themselves in a position to really make the rest of the season interesting?
Yeah, you know, this was, and this is the classic Allegri, right? His teams don't play well to start the season. They figure it out, especially defensively. And if you look in their last few results since we came back from the break, they're really stacking up wins. They're stacking up shutouts, but they still didn't have that focal point goal score. And it has been, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it's been a potentially transformative week for Juventus. You sign, outside of Erling Haaland, I think he's the number one, probably under 23 goal scorer in the world right now.
I agree.
And yeah, you don't spend up to 80 million euros on this guy. It's actually the third highest valued winter transfer in history. Wow. Behind Van Dijk and Coutinho. So, you know, the money speaks. But they also were able to move on Bentancur, as I said. They moved on kind of a flop, Dejan Kulusevski. He goes to Tottenham now to play with Conte, who knows him a little bit, you know. But Juventus has been able to get some, let's say, dead weight off the books. They bring in this guy who can be potentially, you know, transformative for the team. He's scored, I think, 38 goals in the last year and a half in Serie A. He doesn't need to learn the league. They've got Villarreal in the Champions League, which is certainly a winnable tie as well. You know, so the goal this season for Juventus, they're not going to win the league. 11 points is too far. But top four is an absolute necessity. I think that is well within reach at this point. I mean, as a Juventino, it's been an exciting week.
Yeah, for those who aren't paying attention, Vlahovic, who they got from Fiorentina, is tied for the lead in goals scored in Serie A. So they've signed the best goal scorer, at least currently, in the league. And that'll be a great story to watch. Now, part of the reason why we started doing this is because of all the Americans. And what I'm looking at the bottom of the table, fighting off and trying to stave off relegation, is Venezia, and which has Tanner Tessman and Busio on it. And I'm just, you know, they're only a point outside of this relegation zone. Do you think they can, you know, keep it together long enough to stay in Serie A for next season?
Going to be tough, isn't it? I mean, they just haven't really been able to it seems like when they have good defensive performances, they can't score goals. And then when they have good offensive performances, they just give up a lot of goals. They just haven't gotten the results. I don't think they have a win since maybe like early November. It's been a while. It's piling up. And you do definitely have to worry about them. They've got Napoli tomorrow coming to Venice, which, I mean, that's one you're going to want to check out. 8 o'clock kickoff on that one. Napoli, then Torino. It's not going to be an easy road for Venezia. Of course, we root for them. Busio's been playing well, arguably their best player. Tessman, you know, working his way in and out. He started a couple games here and there. But it's going to be tough for them. We'll all root for them to survive. It's going to be tough.
All right. Andy, you got anything else? You want to ask him about some food things before we go? Because I know you like to...
No, Milan, because today was the Classico, the Milanese, have you had that experience in Milan proper? The classic dish of Milan.
I need to. I have not. I have been to... There is an American fried chicken place in Milan run by a guy from, I think he's from Kentucky, that one day me and my wife, we had to have fried chicken. Google it. It's amazing. So I've been to Milan for the fried chicken, the KFC American style. I have not had the Milanese. I know I'm exposing myself right now on that.
Yes,
Andy is judging you, Daniel.
Yes, totally.
Look, okay. Sometimes
am I going to have to make it for you here in the U.S.?
I would be happy to join you for that. And by the way, for you Fiorentina guys, I do have some good news. You did sell Vlahovic, but there was already a transfer in place. They signed Artur Cabral, who's a Brazilian forward from Basel in the Swiss League. He's had at least 15 goals in the last 3 years for them. He's 23 years old. He started today. They're losing to Lazio, but they already had a move planned. So let's watch him. There's still a reason for hope in Florence.
I am very positive about – I'm all things Viola. Daniel, don't you forget that. I wear it proudly. Dan Robertson, our good Serie A correspondent. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you soon. Ciao, as they say over there. All right, when we come back, I want to discuss the pending institution of Robot VAR next here on the Kick Around. We'll do an episode of The Dribble here before the show is over. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about that has been quietly appearing across the landscape, you know, we talked earlier today about the controversy of VAR and the Manchester United situation against Middlesbrough yesterday, where the whole handball thing was going on. But the other part of VAR that we get frustrated with or have talked a lot about is how VAR has been used to judge offside.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the weird things about all of that is offside as a rule and its origins was built on the spirit of just trying to keep guys from snowbirding
right.
Up top, right? Mm-hmm. And over the years, it's become more and more of this issue of much finer levels of degrees of advantageous position.
Well, it used to be back in the day that even was off. If you were even with the defender, you were off. And then they changed the rule that even to give the advantage to the offense, that even was still on. And for a while, it was like sort of evenish. You were on, right? I mean,
right.
there was no hair split. But then we got into video review or reviews of plays, and then then linemen, as they were called, then assistant referees today, they were judged because he wasn't really off, he was, half his body was on, and because it used to be just kind of in the area was okay.
Sure, and by the way, I would say at least in the Premier League, the number of times that we see these calls and you find out that the lineman actually got it right is
insane.
Is really, really
mind-blowing
considering the speed and pace of all this is going on.
Yep.
And I don't want anybody to think that we're about to just start bad-mouthing or getting into the whole VAR thing, because that's not what this conversation is about. It's about the fact that if we're there's two parts to this. One is that Dale Johnson over at ESPN has been writing about the fact that quietly in the background, FIFA has been working with software engineers and artificial intelligence scientists to develop a automated system for deciding offside via computer and camera systems.
So in between this happening and what we were talking about is VAR was instituted, right?
VAR,
and
yep.
a human now
VAR,
has to
VAR,
line
VAR, VAR,
thank
VAR,
you, VAR alarm.
Has to line up the line and do it himself, and it takes a long time. And
when the ball is played off the foot.
Your big thing is that it's a judgment call when a human's doing it.
But even making the lines is a judgment call.
Exactly, all that. And then you're splitting hairs. And now offside has changed from something that was kind of like in the ballpark, like the second base rule in baseball, in the ballpark was okay. Now it's got to be exact because we've gone to VAR. Now that has changed. So if we're going to be like that, then this latest development is not bad.
No. Well, okay, this is the other part of the story that I wanted to talk about, which is there is a divide amongst fans, and I do believe that it is generational, over the concept of being offside is like being pregnant. You either are or you're not. And that's not how you and I were brought up to interpret the rule. There was a gray area of, well, that's not really a position of advantage, so why are you bothering with it? Why would you take away this amazing goal when he really didn't have an advantage? And that was really the beauty and romantic side of it. But I do think that there is a new generation who, because they grew up with soccer via video games, they
and
see
VAR
this
to a certain extent.
Well, yeah, they see this rule as something that needs to be implemented as a binary decision, either are or not.
Yep.
And I do think that's the differentiator. So what is interesting now is, because I think we can all agree the current drawing of the line and all of that is just too messy to be consistent, is the fact that FIFA appears, and they're testing it out now at they're trying to put it in for the World Cup in Qatar, but they're testing it out in AFCON and the World Club tournament.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's where they're testing it. And it's an automated system in many of the same ways that we see with goal line technology, which is a very binary thing. No matter how old you are, the ball is either in or it's not.
Right. And I think that's just something that will change in soccer. It used to be one way back then, and it's evolved. And in the future, it's going to be very black and white.
So if you haven't looked at the story, what's really fascinating is that during this ongoing World Club Cup that is happening,
the FIFA World Cup,
the early rounds of already started, is that there was a goal decided as not it was taken away because a robot, an artificial intelligence system with 10 to 12 cameras.
Yeah. It's not like a robot going.
It's a computer that is tracking everybody on the field. Skeletor
sensors that outline the skeletal.
The structure of the human body, and then can actually do 3D modeling in instantaneous. So it can tell you instantaneously if a player is offside. Yeah. Now, the good news is the system can be adjusted for us all to agree that your toe being, I mean, if we decide that, right? Mm-hmm. Is it any part of your body that makes you offside? Is it only a part that you can score with? Those are all things the system can be baked into.
Yep.
But the fact that it, one, can, by artificial intelligence, very clearly make a decision on when the ball is played, and then two, in that moment, where the line gets drawn, I think everybody will feel much better about this.
Like they do with goal line technology.
With goal line technology.
Yeah, exactly. There is a VAR official, a dedicated offside VAR official that does look at something like, okay, because the computer can't get this. Was that player deemed offside? Was he really interfering with the play or not? Was he involved or not? And there will be some judgment there. But those tend to be more black and white anyway, right? I mean,
sure.
Yeah, rarely is that like a real, like, oh, we disagree on that one.
Now, what I will find interesting is how do they write into the code the decisions about a player in an offside position that may or may not be obstructing the view of the goalkeeper.
But that's the human assistant. That's what
that's
he
what
will
he
provide.
Does? Oh,
yes, he
okay.
provides those eyes.
That part of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Exactly. Now, the other interesting byproduct of this is that coaching staffs, technical teams, will have access to this technology.
Because it's not the cameras used for the broadcast. It's
right.
a completely separate
exactly.
system of cameras.
Yeah, it's not too dissimilar to what technology is used now to track players and passing and all, you know, the same kind of multi-camera technology. They will have access to video, and they will be able to, because it's all done from different angles, they will be able to watch the game only seconds behind the actual time of the game from any angle they want. So Pep Guardiola
it's crazy.
Can have eyes on the other side looking towards him
right.
only a few seconds behind actual play, or he can get like in a corner if he wants and watch the game that way.
Now, the part that I still haven't figured out is how is this going to get paid for? It's like every club going to be responsible. Like does for example, the Premier League decide we're going to use this tool, but every club has to install the system and pay for it? Or do the leagues pay for it? Is FIFA paying for it?
I would assume like the Premier League will pay for it, for it to be used in the Premier League. And it's a one-time investment to install the cameras. And then
the software upgrades.
Right, but that's, you know, those bigger. Are for people like you that then come
that's,
calling on us.
Yeah, and I'm sure that'll come with a small fee, too, yeah. the annual software upgrade yeah. of your offside VAR system robot. And then the question is, this is the weird thing about the FA Cup this year, which is VAR is only being used in stadiums that are being
yeah,
played
that
in the
is
Premier
wonky
League.
A little bit, right? So that's a little wheels off.
Right, so the Manchester United game on Friday has yeah. a VAR situation, but over at the game today with yeah. West Ham and Kidderminster did not
because
they don't have VAR.
Right. People were critical of CONCACAF for not having VAR in the first half of these qualifiers, and then suddenly after the new year, now they have VAR, so now CONCACAF was criticized for having it and then for not having it and now having it. That's kind of similar as well. Some stadiums, yes. Some stadiums, no. I think the big thing here, this is just an evolution in soccer. Now it's going to be very black and white. What is offside and not? And I think in 10 years, it's just going to be an accepted part of how the game is watched.
I do think it's an improvement because it takes much of the subjectivity out of it. What I am worried about, though, is that the end result is going to be this decision that something is offside.
Yeah,
is an
knee.
Innocuous, weird, like that, okay, his knee is offside, but he really doesn't have an advantage.
I know, but you can either do it that way or we can go to fuzzy like it used to be.
I liked fuzzy.
And yeah, I know, but you know, we're old.
Although
we're
fuzzy is what got a goal called against us yesterday in the FA Cup, yeah. right? Fuzzy. Was
right.
it accidental
yeah.
that he touched the ball
right.
with
so
his
they're
hand?
They're eliminating fuzzy from offside. That's just the way
right.
it is.
Well, we've tweeted that article out over on the ESPN site. We'll tweet it again so that you guys can check it out. There's actual video of the computer animation. That's what, by the way, the coolest part of this is the actual computer 3D modeling animation that pops up instantly that draws almost like mm-hmm. this field.
Yeah.
This is I don't know what you'd call it, like a curtain across the player yeah. and shows which part of their body is offside compared to the other one. It's pretty cool.
They're saying eventually the assistant ref is just going to get the signal in his ear, offside, not offside, and he's just going to raise the flag or not.
I wanted a big siren to go off or something okay. like that.
On the
some
stadium.
Monkey.
What about the VAR alarm in all stadiums?
Monkey to stand on the crossbar and jump up yeah. and down.
What about the VAR alarm in all stadiums when offside?
That's right.
Oh, no, that's
we
the
VAR charge
alarm.
Royalties for it.
Yeah. We could. Yeah. We own the rights to that. All right. That'll do it for Robot VAR Talk. When we come back, it's The Dribble on the Kick Around. Here looking for something. Andy, I need to express my admiration for something that may surprise you and now may be the finest sports documentary I've ever watched.
Oh, do say.
Would you find it shocking to hear me say that I think the Netflix series Cheer is that show? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
It's about a college, right?
I'm about yes. to say, is this a soccer documentary? I thought it was a cheerleading documentary.
It is. It is a series on
yeah,
Netflix about Navarro College. At least series yeah. episode. The first season was exclusively about Navarro College, which is one the cheerleading for community colleges or whatever it's called.
Okay.
Like a umpteen times, mm-hmm. and that turned them all into world famous superstars, et cetera, et cetera. Well, season two just dropped a couple of weeks ago, and my wife and I just finished watching it. Now, part of the reason why it took so long for season two was due to COVID. The 2020 season of cheer competition was eliminated. Mm. They didn't have the big competition down in Daytona.
I did not know that.
So here's the thing. Let me just say this. I don't care about cheerleading at all, but if you care about competition, the differences within a team of different people's competitive spirit, leadership, mm-hmm. the drama behind, you know, winning it all and all of that stuff in terms of just purely sports, Greg Whiteley, who is the director of this stuff, dude should be directing the next Star Wars trilogy. It is amazing his ability to take something I care nothing about and turn it into something that I can't wait to watch the next episode about. And it gets so crazy that in between season one and two, the character or the person that turned out to be a nationwide most beloved guy turns out to be a pedophile.
Okay.
And they literally start season two addressing Jerry's arrest for soliciting sex from teenage boys. And they actually have a whole other episode that goes into it. They don't avoid it in any way. And not only do they do that, they drag in their nemesis college and make them part of the story. It's awesome. It is so good. It is really nothing about cheering and everything to do with the human spirit and competition and trying to be your best. It is really, really, really good.
Kind of like Africa Cup of Nations. Human right. spirit, competition.
Time now for
drama.
The
dribble. No? I don't know.
I'm telling you, you are missing out on very attractive young adults competing at their finest.
Peter.
It's a little weird to say. A little
Peter.
You phrase that a little strangely.
I'm
why
a weird guy.
Why don't we go back to soccer talk? Africa Cup of Nations. Do you know it's an all-Liverpool final?
Yes,
and that's
Liverpool
why he wants to talk
final.
About
that's the only reason why only, we're talking about this.
Liverpool in the house.
Tomorrow, 1 p.m., Senegal and Egypt.
No.
Sadio Mane.
Yes.
Versus Mo Salah.
Yes.
By the way,
the showdown.
Am I wrong in saying that I saw a highlight package of Mo Salah being put in the pocket of a Seattle Sounder left back?
What?
Nuhu. Nuhu, who plays for the Seattle Sounders, had a really, really good game against Mo Salah in the semifinal.
Yeah. Still, Egypt prevailed in PKs.
Andy, I'm telling you, you would really like cheer.
Cheers, yeah. I've watched Cheers a lot. Man, that was one
Norm,
of the best
you know,
shows.
He was great.
I'm never talking TV with you ever.
So Egypt got past Cameroon, the home team, who everybody thought would get to the final in this very
testy
wonky
game too.
Africa Cup of Nations, and kind of we've had some issues.
Yeah.
But tragic
yeah, trampling of human life.
Yes, referee decisions that were questionable, and VAR-related wheels off moments.
Wait, but, are you comparing death to VAR-related issues? Is that what I just heard?
And Andy said, yes, they're all just problematic.
We were laying out all the issues the tournament
You
had.
Just kind of equated the loss of human life to, yeah, that referee missed a handball. You know,
people have lost life through COVID.
Why are you turning this on me
are
now?
Are you saying not?
Anyway, that game is tomorrow. I think the only place to watch it is on BN Sport or Fubo TV. Fubo TV.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's on the free BN Sport, BN Connect, which you can get over HD.
How do you keep track of all this?
I'm a nerd.
Okay.
When I'm not watching Cheer,
squad.
I'm paying attention to this.
Weak man.
So the African Cup of Nations is almost over.
And then Mane and Salah get to return back to their clubs and work on bridging that gap with Man City.
Have you watched any of the games?
I've watched extended highlights. You know, like a 20-minute highlight package of games. So you can't, you know, you see the best plays. I don't know. Have you watched games at all?
I'm like you. Like you go on YouTube and they put all the highlight packages on a YouTube feed and you can watch them. And it's, you know, it's okay. It's I'm still confused why they play this at this particular time of year.
Right.
Because it's always in the middle of everybody's league season, and it creates havoc with teams that have a lot of African players on it. It just, I don't know.
But it's not just about you. It's their tournament, and they want to have it now.
It doesn't actually affect me in any way, Andy.
Yeah, it draws players away from your favorite league, and maybe this is why you're annoyed.
Well, your team actually is the one missing players, not mine.
I'm fully supportive of this tournament.
Because I'm a bit of a drama queen, and I love to get into other people's business.
Hey, speaking of wonky tournaments, the FIFA Club World Cup, real quick.
Yeah.
Update for you. Monterrey, the CONCACAF representative,
out! Oh, no.
1-0 loss today to a team from...
Oh, it's a win or you're out at this point?
It's a one and done.
They play El Hilal or some...
Yeah, Al-Hilal.
Is that the Iranian team?
That's the team representing Asia.
The Asian, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of tournaments, did you
Good
know
segue.
The U.S. women's national team is coming to the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
The She Believes Cup, I believe.
Yes. Now, I am of the opinion that the She Believes Cup is typically a tournament of the highest quality of opponents for the United States.
Oh, who are we looking at
here? Iceland, the Czech Republic, and New Zealand. The three
good
components. I don't think any of them are even in the top 15 of FIFA rankings.
The other two are not women's soccer powerhouses.
Now, February 23rd is when the two games are being played up at Toyota Stadium.
Yeah, now this is a transition national team now, and a lot of the youths are going to be played.
Yes, yesterday...
They're going to see some minutes now.
Vlatko, the coach that's been taking this thing over, is in a tough situation because he's a guy who knows what he's doing, the players love him, he's got a fantastic resume, and he really is the right guy for the job, but he's in that weird transitional moment where he's got to push the Alex Morgans and Kristen Presses and Carly Lloyds and Megan Rapinos out of the way to make room for
the young'uns.
The Katarina and all of the young'uns that are coming up, and that's what's going to happen. So if you and your daughter or kids were planning on spending a lot of money to go to this game to see the big names, they're not going to be here. But I'm going to encourage you to go anyway, because the level of players you are going to see are the guys...
Or gals.
the women that are going to be the ones playing in the next big tournaments.
Yes.
And
they're pretty good, too.
And you know what? Our friend Daniel Crook actually made this point the other day. If you go see this team play on the 23rd up in Frisco, there's a good chance in Katarina Macario, the girl that is playing for the U.S. that could have played for Brazil. She played at Stanford. Instead of playing here in the United States, she signed a deal to go play in France with Lyon. She's arguably a potential Ballon d'Or winner in her future.
Oh.
And you're watching one of the best players in the world.
Ballon d'Or.
And she's likely to going to be playing in Frisco, and that alone may be reason to go see those games.
Doesn't it seem like all the good players lately are going to Lyon and have signed with Lyon? They're going to be like the most powerful team in the history of women's soccer.
You know, I do think there's an interesting conversation to be had when it, you know, now that the women's situation in terms of their contract with the federation or however all that legal stuff is going to end up playing out. While that's been going on and they've been fighting about this, England, France, other big countries that have big men's leagues in Europe have quietly been putting together really, really, really good domestic women's leagues.
They've upped their game for sure.
The WSL in England is getting a lot of play. Like, the media has made a really clear choice to spend more time talking about the the WSL in England. Than the American media does spending about the NWSL.
Yeah.
Now, I think I'm correct in saying that if you were to take the however many teams are in the United States Domestic Women's League, all of those teams would be competitive in any women's European domestic league, and it doesn't necessarily translate the other way.
But it's getting very even now, right? And this is the issue, too. La Liga is the other one that's up their game, because France has been doing it for a while, Sweden's, Germany, but now England and Spain, two very powerful soccer countries, are up in their game on the women's side. Is that a lot more American women are going to start, because they're going to start paying more, and the level of play is going to be high, and the standard is going to be high, they're going to start playing over there. And is that going to hurt the national team program?
And that's kind of what I was getting at, is while we've been bickering about all this other stuff that, by the way, is worth bickering about and getting resolved, the fact that the American Women's League has always been the real crown jewel of the sport, it's in danger of not being that now, which means are women from America more likely to go try to live their dream overseas, which would continue, as you said, continue to hurt that. And I do think that's something to keep an eye on. You know, if the Dallas-Fort Worth area is ever going to get an NWSL team, and where would they play and who would own them and all of that stuff, I you know, is something to keep an eye on, because I do believe there is a viable market for that type of thing in this area. Mm. Because there's so much girls soccer that's played at a very, very high level in this town.
There is.
And much of it started here with Sting.
Sting was the pioneer soccer women's soccer club in the U.S., no doubt. They were the first national team. Sting Soccer Club from Dallas was the first. Their players made up the first U.S. national women's team to travel abroad in competition.
All right, now since we're talking about soccer in the Dallas area, we should spend the last couple of minutes just telling everybody that since we talked to you last week, it was made official. FC Dallas has signed for a club record $7.5 million in transfer fee, Alan Velasco. Mm-hmm. Although because he's Argentinian, he pronounces it Velaco. He is 19 years old. He is a winger.
Velaco.
That's how he pronounces it. Yeah,
that's not Argentinian. That's just a weird pronunciation of the name.
Somebody says that's how some Argentinian neighborhoods pronounce it, or something. He is coming from Independiente. He's considered to be one of the top five under 20s in the Argentinian system at that position. Dallas apparently got him at a discount rate. Independiente was asking or hoping to get as much as $20 million for him in a transfer fee. This is a fundamental sea change in how Dan and Clark Hunt run this team. Not only did they do that, as we told you last week, they went out and signed Paul Areola, who's part of the U.S. national system from DC United, a veteran in the league.
They signed him for 3 more years, too. They have him for a while. He's a young player.
So the Major League Soccer kicks off in this month. In fact, the first Dallas game is against Toronto on the 28th, I think, or 26th, I think it is.
Yeah.
Things are different this year.
Look, they're lining up to be a really exciting 4-3-3 team. A team that plays a 4-3-3, which is how a lot of these modern
The new coach was clubs. Greg Berhalter's assistant at the national team, and it does appear that system is what is getting instituted here in Dallas. They played Orlando in a friendly yesterday, and they've got a couple of more before the season kicks
off.
And
all this started because the new coach, Nico, came and saw Paxton and said, Paxton's an 8! How do we get Paxton to play 8? And this is how!
Andy and I's dreams of Paxton Pomacall as a full-time 8 for FC Dallas is happening.
So get Paxton an 8, they went and signed all these players.
We'll talk about this as we get closer to the season in the next week or so, but the reality is I have like 5 big talking points, and one of that is this is the season where Paxton's career is decided.
Okay.
If he gets hurt again, you know, but if he has a baller season...
Yeah.
The promise of going overseas suddenly is reignited, right?
Yes.
It becomes
Correct.
A real deal.
Yep. Agree.
And by the way, they also traded for another international slot, so it's possible they're going to sign another name.
Team's on the move.
Hey, it's nice to see all the whining and complaining and bickering.
No, I thought you were going to say it's nice to see all these moves.
Got us somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Well, I want to...
Oh, you're part of that.
I want to say all of us that have been bitching about this for 20 years got somewhere finally.
You think they're in that room, the strategy center?
The Hunt dining room.
Yeah, and they're like, and now we can shut the beer up.
Daniel, please pass the Grey Poupon. By the way, what are we going to do about all those whiny bitches?
No, not those. Peter.
Yeah. What about that Welpton fellow?
They just have your Twitter feed on a big screen in there just rotating through.
Look at him.
Not on a screen, on a dartboard.
Look at him criticizing us for paying Frank O'Hara all that money.
I'm sure that's how they talk.
It's a live reenactment, a live look.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, that does it for another episode of The Dribble. Successful, I would say. All right. I think There's no football next week. Are we on next week, Sam?
As of right now, yes.
That
so
is awesome. Why are you shaking?
Why would? What?
Because there might be a basketball or hockey game or something that
it's
kicks
Super
us off.
Super Bowl next weekend.
Well,
no football on Saturday. American football.
Andy, are you excited about the halftime show?
Eh.
Do you even know
no.
who's in? Okay. I didn't
who is it?
So. Don't worry about it. It's nothing you need to worry about then. If you don't know, you don't know.
Mon Spaghetti.
Exactly. Hey, everybody, don't forget to go watch the two seasons of Cheer. Trust me, it's worth your time. Jacob, thanks for tickers. Sam, thank you for producing. EA, thank you for board operating, again, at a very, very high level. We love to have you. P1s, we love and adore you. Get stuck in and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth, KTCK FM Flower Mound, a Cumulus Media Station.